I've learned that when you just simply don't stop, that's when the magic happens. Might be a cliche one to start with, but honestly, just not giving up. There were 1,000 reasons for me to not make a TikTok the next day over the course of the last 1,000 plus days, but I just kept making them.
This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Being able to work remotely is a game changer. You don't have to spend time and money commuting, and often you can work from anywhere in the world. But it does have its downsides. It can be pretty lonely working from home, and if you're off traveling, it can be really hard to find somewhere to sit down and work without a sticky table. That's where WeWork comes in. WeWork is co-working space with offices all over the world. They have everything you need. Fast Wi-Fi, free tea and coffee, and loads of desk space and meeting rooms, so you always have somewhere to get your work done, whether that's alone or with friends and coworkers. And with WeWork On Demand, you can book co-working space by the day and meeting rooms by the hour at locations all around the world. Thanks to our friends at WeWork, you can get 50% off your next co-working space booking. Head to we.co/Brian50, that's B-R-Y-A-N 50, download the WeWork app and enter code BRYAN50, that's Brian50, to get 50% off your next booking. Here we go.
I honestly don't know what I am these days because all of the worlds have become so mixed so fast. I'm a dad and I'm a husband first and foremost. I'm somebody that happens to use content in a multitude of ways, both professionally and personally, that has become professionally at the same time. I am a marketing executive that fell backwards into a social media world of somewhat being renowned, I guess. Depends on who you are, what your perspective is on what I do.
Cool. We'll clip that right there and I'll use that as the intro. Hey, everyone. I'm Brian. Welcome to another episode of the show. Tim, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
I usually ask my guests, how did you get this job?
Depends on what job you're talking about. I feel like I've got three right now. I got my corporate job simply by impressing people around me during the time that I didn't know. It's like those people that you don't know that are watching, but are ultimately watching. I had worked with somebody at ESPN. That person left the company, went to what was Time Warner Cable Media, got an email one day that said, hey, I have something interesting. It, you know, is rooted in your production background. I was in marketing heavily at the time, but I started my career in live sports production, and it was to reinvent how local cable sales could facilitate production needs for small businesses at scale across the country. And I thought, this sounds amazing. I was managing maybe 10 or 11 people at the time and had a very big book of business at ESPN for their things like, Coors Light Cold Hard Facts and some of the in-content advertising that they were doing. And this felt like a smart evolution of both management perspective, because it was 100 people that you're going to inherit out of the gate, and there's going to be a complex business problem to solve within this. How do you reinvent how this is done? I didn't know that that was going to entail, they literally brought me in the Thursday before my first day and said, you're going to have to fire all 100 people and do it within the first 6 weeks and reinvent the department within the first 8 months.
Ooh.
We didn't tell you this going through the interview process for a handful of reasons, but that's what it's going to be. But to answer your question, I got that job by doing the best that I could, which has just always been kind of my MO, like whatever I have in front of me, let's do the best that I can with it. That can sometimes have a ripple effect and you leave an impression that you don't know that you're leaving. And then all of a sudden, someone that could have been two, you know, boxes down the org chart is like, hey, here's an opportunity. The creator thing was just, you know what? I want to get away from Instagram. As a 46-year-old, you know, had Instagram since 2010. And all of a sudden TikTok popped up and it's like, oh, this is interesting. And I'm sick of being judged when I do experiment with content in places where friends and family are like, what are you doing? Like, just put a picture of your kid up and call it a day. And that got wildly out of hand within a couple of years. And then that has opened up other doors. So right now I would say my jobs are, and I literally have this listed on LinkedIn, vice president of content at my day job. Then I'm a creator for Knight, as I'm assigned creator with Knight. It's a very well-known agency in the space. And signed with Park and Fine, and I signed a book deal for something that'll come out in 2025.
Amazing. Let's unpack that a little bit more. I love the day job. I love that you still do it. And that's like, you know, I'm guessing, I'm just thinking about a pie. I mean, how many times can you slice that thing?
Yeah.
It must be getting very thin at this point.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, you're managing a family, mm-hmm. you know, or at least you're the dad in this role.
Yep.
And there's a your partner, and then you have your daughter, which, you know, who all require your time as well, yep. And vice versa. Talk about the inflection point. When did that sort of micro storytelling start, and what was the impetus?
The impetus was just to express myself, mm-hmm. literally just to see what can be possible with video. And that really started with just like home movies, right? I mean, a bunch of stuff that I posted to YouTube or Vimeo way back when, but it was never, I never thought, hey, you can build an audience with this. It was literally a link to send to a friend to say, hey, I made this video from our trip last week. And a lot of it wasn't even in the same type of cadence that I have now. It was TikTok unleashing voiceover capability, which was like early 2020, because at first you couldn't do voiceovers on it. I'm like, oh, that's so, that makes it so much easier. I can use these other clips that I have.
Yeah, I don't dance.
I don't sing. I don't dance. I mean, I made one that was just like, here's four or five random clips of me and my wife and my daughter going to an art exhibit in Brooklyn. The next handful were protein bar reviews, because that's what I was doing on Instagram, but I wanted to do it in a safer space and be a bit more abstract with it, and also just learn, right? Based on the day job, production at scale within a small budget for small businesses. Now there's a device that's in everyone's pocket that can edit on the fly with filters, et cetera. So it's literally just like, I like talking about protein bars. Let me see how weird these filters are and like how quickly you can put something together.
Mm-hmm.
Voiceover comes out. And I wanted to explain myself a little bit more because I was surprised. Like, people started to watch and started to follow. And I'm like, wow, there's 500 people now. Like, that's so wild that that type of audience is there for these protein bar reviews.
Yeah.
And I wanted to explain that in addition to protein bar reviews, I love talking about sneakers. I love talking about sushi. I love talking about New York City. I have all of these things. And at the time I said, there's the things in my life that I put in my mouth and the things that I do not. And I just explained it like that at a super high level and had probably my first, quote, viral post with that. I'm like, that's so interesting. And then from there, I started to hear, I came for one of those things, but I stayed for the wisdom. And I'm like, that is something I totally did not expect.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, wow, I have this at my disposal. I'm the actor, I'm the writer, I'm the producer, I'm the director. I control it all. What is my brain really saying, and how do I extrapolate that and just do that? And that's basically what people see on a day in and day out basis now. It's like a little bit of Wes Anderson, super old school Woody Allen, Cheech and Chong, mix those together. And it's just, it's the natural narrative that's always playing in the back of my head. Like, I almost can't turn it off.
I love that comp. Yeah, that's what I thought of when I see your storytelling. It's Cheech and Chong meets Woody Allen. You know, it's Tim, you know. No. Let's go back to the protein bars.
Yep.
I'm also a protein bar fan. Net this out for us. Like, where did you land on the bars?
As far as like top ones?
Yeah.
The Grenade is a brand that it's relatively well accessible here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
I think that their marketing is terrible, with all due respect. Like, it's a weird brand name for a protein bar.
Mm-hmm.
But the product is fantastic. Their white chocolate salty peanut is probably the best protein bar on the planet. I then default to No Cow, which is a very, like, high, people think that that's awful. It's a vegan protein bar. I'm lactose intolerant, so, like, I'll err on that side.
Yeah, it's fair.
You know, also up there, I mean, Quest has a couple of good products. Fit Crunch is remarkable. I have one of those every single night as the last piece of my snack hour routine. But I used to get this protein bar of the month club from Europe. And so I was able to try like all of these crazy varieties and brands that you just couldn't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get your hands on any Grenade protein bar, do it. It's worth it. If you're lactose intolerant, go No Cow. They're way better than I think people give them credit for. It's just a different texture thing.
Where's the Aloha bar rank for you? That's one I like, the Aloha bar.
So my question would be, because that's not on my radar, what are the macros? Because I think protein bar has to be defined as something that actually has something that's pretty close to like 20 grams of protein for every 200 to 300 calories.
Yeah. I think it's 12 to 14 for about 200 calories. So it's maybe a little low.
I would say that that's borderline. And I would get really specific too, where it's like there's a cutoff point. And I'm sorry that that's just not, that's like, that's borderline in there. So never tried it. It could probably be because I would see it and be like, these macros don't make sense for me.
Yeah, I got you. And that aligns like with your lifestyle. So let's talk about that for a second. So you're known as a runner, or I see you running all the time. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself a runner?
No, absolutely not. Okay. I did not, I mean, I'm running a lot now, somewhat of a creature of habit, like got into it. And especially now I put a cold plunge in my backyard and that's like, this amazing elixir at the end of a run where I lifted weights this morning and I was like, I don't want to get in the plunge because I didn't run.
Yeah. Is it a plunge unit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're one of our partners.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Amazing. Love it. Got one in August. Every single day, doesn't matter what the weather is outside. I've been a huge, huge, huge fan. So happily to shout out plunge.
You have the all in?
I have it's like the...
The new gen or the first
The box to the side, not the one where the unit is connected.
Yeah, they have the all-in now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. It looks like, I'm like, damn it, if only I waited a couple months. But
yeah. Do you know they have a sauna coming out too?
I do, and that's been tempting because I live in Brooklyn. We have a backyard. There's a little playhouse that my daughter has largely outgrown. So that's been very tempting to look at and be like, mm-hmm. I got the space and it's right there. Mm-hmm. And there is already electrical that goes out there. So mm-hmm. We'll see.
Ryan and Mike, if you're listening.
Ryan.
Let's hook it up.
I mean, look, there you get a lot of organic play on that, to say the least.
I was just out at their facility in Sacramento.
Oh, cool.
I mean, imagine like two or three Costco size facilities in there doing all the assembly and... Pretty dope.
I bet. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. And I did a tremendous amount of research, and I'm not just saying this, but it seemed to be pretty straightforward. Plus, in the creator space, you start to make these friends, right? Mm-hmm. And Caleb Simpson, who is well known for how much you pay for rent, can I get a tour of your house?
Yep.
He has one on his back deck. We went on a run, got to try it out there. I was like, I'm sold on this. I had done cryotherapy, so cold therapy was already something that was like, okay, cool, this makes sense.
Yeah.
And this guy named Matt Choi, who I don't know if they have a deal, but like I know he just put a sauna in his backyard in Austin, and he was an everyday plunger too. And then I was like, okay, this has got to happen.
Yeah. It's good for like that middle age inflammation. Mm-hmm. I've been plunging now pre-workout.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
And then I'll go to the gym. I get a lot of my aerobic exercise through tennis lately or pick up basketball.
Yep.
And so like hips.
I was going to say you're brave.
Well, hips, knees, and ankles.
Yep.
I'll go in post game for the inflammation only. But if I'm going to the weight room, I go in before I go so that I keep the gains.
Yep.
Because it'll, you know, apparently.
I've heard that. Yeah. Yeah, it's better before for when you're lifting.
Yeah, it gives me like a natural pump. I get the energy.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm like running around the house. I'm like, all I want to do is push-ups right now to like...
It'll wake you up.
Yeah, totally.
Or you can do the same thing in a cold shower, just, you know.
I did that, but like there's something way different. Like I did cold showers for a while when cryotherapy, cold showers just weren't doing the trick, especially I think in old New York homes where the water's going to like run in with... What's, you know, in the radiators or something where it's like, oh, this is not that cold after like 40 seconds or something.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. I mean, same thing happens in California. 55 degrees is cold in California.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not cold enough to get, you know, your plunge on if, you know, you're used to 37 or 38.
Yeah.
So your morning routine, and it's, I mean, mad respect. I don't know how you do these daily vlogs. I mean, it's just, it's a lot of work. As someone who shoots video and does production and editing, I mean, walk us through. So I'm sure you're up at 4:30, like
4:02 or 3:53. It depends on whether or not my wife has to be at work at 6:30 or 8:00. So the days where I drop off my daughter, 3:53 usually. Straight downstairs, pre-workout, immediately on the laptop, try to knock out as much work as I can within the first hour. if I've done my homework the night before, I've got a rough cut ready for myself from the previous day's whatever.
Oh, okay. So you're doing it the night before, not the night of.
I'm trying to get smarter about that overall. Right now it is run around, grab as much vertical video as I can,
yep,
make it up the night before or the morning of. If I'm like, I'll try to whittle, because I'll get like 15 minutes of footage, sometimes up to 40 minutes of footage, whittle it down to 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I sit there and I'm like, okay, where do I start? Mm-hmm. Literally, like, I'll just go through and be like, where's an interesting place where I can potentially grab somebody's attention, and then reverse engineer from there. 90% of them are made off the top of my head, and I give myself a timed out. So if it's not done, I don't have a piece of content for the day. And there's a lot of times where I'm like, I have a piece of crap content in my pocket now, but it's something. And I'm really grappling now with how do I make better use of that time. But that's basically 4 a.m. until on days where my daughter has to be taken to school, be 4 a.m. to like 5:30, mm-hmm, and then I'll run or whatever for an hour.
So you deliberately set parameters for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
60 to 90 minutes.
Yep.
So it's done, or it's not done.
Yep.
Are you scripting? Like, are you writing this out? Because a lot of your stuff is VO. Like, yep, you shoot the B-roll, and yep, then there's voiceover.
Yep.
You're not scripting.
No.
It's just off the hip.
Correct.
Okay. And you're editing on your phone?
No. iMovie.
So, iMovie.
Yes, yeah. Which is especially for those that are in the space. So, it's not only iMovie, but it's iMovie on a laptop, which does not do vertical video natively.
Right.
So, I AirDrop it. I will rotate, then I put it in the timeline. I will rotate it and I'll sit there like this and I'll edit for, you know, and watch it, and then I'll export it, rotate it back. And
so I'm guessing, so iMovie, why? Like, because that's what you knew how to do, and
it's fat. Yeah. I don't need that much. And I like the fact that it's like, okay, here are the tools you have at your disposal.
Okay.
And you're going to have to figure the rest out with your footage. And how often can you just simply make what you're saying deliver visually what's happening? And that's as complicated as it needs to get. I did a puff of smoke effect yesterday. I had the former CEO of 7-Eleven reached out and was like, hey, you want to do something interesting together? Or somebody from his team did. And I was like, sure. And we were discussing like, okay, what's the premise, and kind of making it up on the fly. I was like, well, I'll just have you like disappear at the end. Like, you were just some sort of corporate Yoda that came in as like the new guy, but okay, you implied. And he's like, can you make me like a puff of smoke? And that was about as far down the road of like visual effects or fancy things. And I had to get a little bit of help from somebody on the team. I'm like, I think I know how to do this, but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, iMovie, simple, and just get it done and leave it on storytelling.
Okay, so I'm going to push back now.
Yeah.
So you've been doing this now for how long?
First TikTok was August of 2019, started in earnest in early 2020. I've probably made 1,600 TikToks since then.
All right, so 600 TikToks
1,600.
In. 1,600 TikToks in, and 4 years in, basically.
Yep.
Why don't you have an editor?
So I just hired one for YouTube because I know that that's something that I need to scale. I don't know. I love doing it. I genuinely love doing it. I love seeing like, can what is in my head actually be put down into a timeline?
Tim, are you a control freak?
I'm not, because there's a lot of things where I'm like, I'd be totally fine with, like, I trust your judgment, especially at work, like air traffic control with the high volume of stuff that we do. Trust your work. Here's my opinion. Try to be very specific about subjective versus, hey, these are just things that need to be changed. Mm-hmm. And I like the task of trying to complete what I see. But on the YouTube thing, I mean, you can ask my editor who's done maybe four of these for me so far. And I'm like, cool, I'm trusting your opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, go nuts. And I would rather get things out the door than get too much in control. Mm-hmm. So that's always been like a big part, is I'm here to help, I'm here to assist, but I'm not here to control, because that's not good for anybody. And I also don't think that I'm smart enough to have that true control across the board.
Yeah. I mean, I just respect the amount of work and time and effort that goes into, I mean, a daily vlog is a slog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no joke.
Yeah.
And 1,600 videos in,
mm-hmm,
I mean, that's a tremendous amount of thought and effort. So mad props to you. How about the platforms? You know, you have about a million-ish on TikTok.
Yep.
But half that number on Instagram.
One-tenth, 100,000 is what I got on Instagram.
Oh, it's a tenth, right. So there's a bit of a delta there. And then YouTube is new as a new venture.
Very new.
So how did you decide, like where to put your priorities?
Yep. It's been so haphazard. It's just been, I'm experimenting. TikTok just happened to be the first like video first platform that made sense. And it was a place where nobody knew who I was. So I could do whatever I wanted and it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And that was really the beauty of it. Only within the last, it's funny, I grew like 30,000 followers on Instagram since I finally started to repost TikToks on Instagram. Literally took me like 2.5 years and everybody saying, why are you not putting your stuff from TikTok and Instagram? I was like, way too many friends and family on Instagram, but that's now they're all on TikTok as well. So that kind of flew out the window.
Yeah.
And I felt weird about just being like, hey, here's this one thing in these two places.
An echo chamber, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been trying to do two different versions in some cases. And that'll be like the other day I had something that at the last second, literally within 10 minutes of posting, I'm like, I'm ripping off the voiceover. Reels is arguably a better platform for use of music based off of how that element shows up in the space. I'm like, I had this Noah Kahan song in my head. Let me just lay that on top and then put it out there and it'll be completely different look and feel. But it's all still experimentation. I have to get better about, I should know right now, next Tuesday morning, what am I going to do? If I'm really smart about this, I should know that. I don't. So I'm failing in real time intentionally to get myself to that space while trying to tell the story of that happening, because I think that the audience will appreciate the fact that, no, this is real. Like I'm not, especially because I think the voiceover can come across a little pretentious at times of like, you know, it just, it has this, you know, you're able to remove yourself and you're removing any stumbles, you're removing any, you know, especially for how you talk. So I try to layer in as well, like, no. This is, I made that up off the top of my head and I don't know what I'm doing next Tuesday and I should. Like, let's talk about this journey together because y'all are witnessing this in real time. And all I really want to do to get out of this, honestly, if I can get you to trust me wholeheartedly, then like there's 1,000 things we can do together, especially because I feel like I can bring so much corporate perspective to the space for generations that need it and seem to actually be craving it in some regard. And if I can just build the trust through that and show them how I'm feeling and figuring out process and what am I going to do and scheduling, et cetera, that's, you know, arguably could be a fun story.
How does the audience differ from platform to platform? Do you feel like there's a whole different audience, even though there's, you know, this Venn diagram, there's some middle ground between TikTok scrollers and Instagram scrollers and YouTube watchers.
Yep.
I feel like YouTube is sort of a lean-in experience.
Totally.
TikTok's more of a lean-back.
Yep.
What's your take on that?
I totally agree. YouTube is commitment to who that person is and the trust that whatever they're going to do is going to be worth showing up for. That's why you are subscribing versus following. Mm-hmm. I think that it's so interesting, especially since I've only been repurposing the videos for a short period of time, to see the different performance metrics. The pieces that feel that are a bit more drawn out perform better on Instagram, even though you can only upload 90 seconds there. Where I did this one, it was like, hey, my week one perspective and here were my favorite things. It was a bit more thoughtful. There weren't as many cuts. It was a bit slower, performed incredibly well on Instagram. Same piece, I deleted it off of TikTok because it was just not performing whatsoever. And I've noticed it's almost that there's a more, people want something a bit more calm, I feel, on Instagram. I don't know if that's a demographics thing, but I feel like that has been consistent since I've started to repost it. Things that do not perform well on TikTok perform super well on Instagram. It's usually not vice versa, but there does seem to be I'm talking to somebody in their mid-30s versus I'm talking to somebody potentially in their mid-20s between Instagram skewing a bit older, which makes sense, right? I mean, one's been around for much longer and is, you know, the other one's, you know, arguably more Gen Y and Gen Z. Mm-hmm.
And what do you think they come for? Why are they tuning into Tim?
I heard more often than I never would have thought this was a piece of feedback. You make getting older seem less scary. There's something, yeah. There's like this comfort of stable family, relationship that looks solid, job that looks hectic but in control, and somebody that is just enjoying their surroundings.
Shoe game, you know, on point.
The fact that there are aesthetics that go along with it, whether it's sneakers or just the lifestyle of being in New York City, there's something that just seems to appear. And I saw that when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. And then you start to see LinkedIn notes and comments and DMs that are like almost copy and paste. But in some cases, especially recently by reposting things on Instagram, I'm like, I'm now getting flooded with stuff that I saw 2 years ago on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating because it's basically the same narrative. I'm less scared of corporate America. I feel like there's actually a potential for me to find a relationship that's going to be longstanding and still get me excited. And the idea of all of these adult responsibilities looks less daunting because I've kind of got this dumbass guy behind the that in regards to the way that I weave the tail on a day in and day out basis, where it's about the nuances and about like bringing those to the surface in a way that almost mutes what is always there, which is just the chaos of the world. Mm-hmm. And to just kind of live in the moment, that seems to be what is aggregating the broader perception of why people like this.
I love that. And that's my impression too, as I see your cute little family and you and your wife being affectionate and you doing stuff for her and she's doing stuff for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, when she's running the marathon, you're there supporting her and you're taking your daughter here and there. And, you get this glimpse into your life, which is very comforting, I think. I think that tracks with me. But it's also, in many ways, holds up a mirror to my own life. It's like, oh, Tim's living a life like I am. It's mm-hmm. like family first. Mm-hmm. We're going out to eat. I love food too. He's wearing a cool suit or, trying his hand at becoming a better public speaker, mm-hmm. which, everyone kind of secretly aspires to, right? Like feeling more comfortable talking in front of people or on yep. camera. Those are all very relatable things. So I think, if I would give you my opinion, mm-hmm. it's like, you're like Mr. Relatable.
Mm, thank you. I'll take that because I want, going back to the trust thing, I want to be able to, for almost any audience in any circumstance, be like, we could have a conversation because I genuinely feel that way. Like when I was in high school, that was my bread and butter was, I'm not going to be the coolest person in the room. I'm not going to be the best athlete, etc. I would happily hang my hat on based on my own paranoia and my own insecurities in my teenage years. If I can hang my hat on, I can go to any clique and they're at least going to be like, oh, hey, what's up, Tim? In a positive tone, I'm set. That's like all I need. Mm-hmm. And that I feel like has been consistent throughout and something that I'm trying to be cognizant of. At the same time, not let it paralyze me too much because then you can become like, I'm just trying to appease everybody.
Yeah, I would call it humility. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's like it's in check.
Well, yeah, there's 8 billion of us on the planet and there's not a single person that I'm better than.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like that makes it easier to share too, right? Like there's nothing that I'm trying to preach or say, hey, you're doing this wrong or you should be doing this. It makes it much easier when I genuinely am like, y'all can take it or leave it. Like I'm just here and I'm sharing. And if you don't like it for any reason, like fine, I'll try to not let it affect me if you're leaving negative comments and that kind of stuff. But like,
yeah,
just here to have fun.
Yeah. And it doesn't appear to be acting at all. It's like, I've just flipping the camera on. You guys are just along for the ride.
Right.
I'm letting you see into my life.
Right. Well, I don't have the time for I suck at acting. In fact, it's very noticeable. At least I notice it. Anytime my wife takes a clip, I instantly get like, what are you doing? It's so much easier when I can just like, literally, this is what I'll do. This is the move in the street. And because I don't use anything that like I'm actually like from an audio perspective, I'm like, if I just get gums flapping so I can be walking with somebody and do that. And I grab it. It doesn't really matter what was happening in the moment. I can at least remember the general sense of it and then repurpose it later on. But it has to be grab and go. It has to be no frills. Like you can't, to your point, you can't do this on a consistent basis. If it's like, cool, let me set up a tripod here. Mm-hmm. like this thing is super banged up because it's been on every flat surface in New York City mm-hmm. that will hold it up for at least 4 seconds
yeah.
and allow me to capture a shot, and I get it or I don't get it.
Well, so the other day I did see a drone shot.
Mm-hmm.
That's new.
Totally. Well, that was had a friend that has one, thought it would be fun, and it was super fun.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to start to expand the way I storytell. And that could be, it's so funny. It didn't perform well on TikTok so far. And I think I know why. I tried too hard to be like, let me tell you why I took this footage versus let me step back and let me tell you the story of like that day. And if I would have done that, I think it would have performed better to be like, hey, check out why I love this church. And here's that thing that I always go past that we talk about, or like however I would express that. So sometimes I almost get in part of why I still use iMovie is I might get too distracted by what can this thing do versus how do I just use this to help do what I've already been doing. But I would love to continue to experiment because it's just fun.
You want my 2 cents?
Please.
This is the opinion of one, so take it for what it is. I think maybe, and I didn't know that it didn't perform well.
Yeah.
But as you say this, I'm processing it quickly. Here's a off-the-cuff response. Yeah. I think that you have such a connection with the audience
mm-hmm.
that the drone shot was zoomed way out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like this itty bitty yep. character in it.
Yep.
We didn't see the whites of your eyes. We didn't yep. see your face smiling. We didn't see any reaction yep. or emotion.
Yep.
And it's you
yep.
that we come to see,
yep.
not the footage.
Yep.
And I think that's probably what was missing.
Yeah, interesting. I buy that wholeheartedly. It's so interesting to hear you say that too, because in my head, I saw it differently, but I'm trusting, you know, this was a knew this guy, Sam, amazing mm-hmm. dude. Hey, let's collaborate on something. Will you be at my house at this time on this day? Cool. Not going to like, not, you know, no control freak aspect, if nothing else, like I'm going to be kind of hands off. You know, we kind of lost each other in a couple spots. Here's what I got. Just an amazing yeah. introduction. But like in my head, I kind of saw like, cool, can it fly next to me? And then like zoom past the bodega that's still dark at 5 a.m. or whatever time.
Yeah.
So that I can be like, this is why I love that sign. And like some of those things. So I do hope to experiment more in that space because to your point, the different angles of just bringing somebody in closer, but just giving them a different experience is something I would love to tap into.
Yeah. And I'll bet if you had points in that where they cut back to you flying the drone.
Yeah.
That you probably would have got more traction. I'm just guessing. It's very non-scientific.
Yeah.
But I think it's the audience has this relationship with you. They're part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Truman Show, but in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually real life. Let me switch gears to ROI.
Yeah.
So how have you been able to monetize this? Mm-hmm. Like, how is this 1,600 videos in now still worth doing?
Yep.
And how are you capitalizing on it?
So signed creator with Knight. Knight is mostly well known for being Mr. Beast's agency.
Mm-hmm.
So
Reed.
Best Reed.
Company, yep.
Reed's such a good dude. And working with a gentleman named Andrew and a woman named Brooklyn and a handful of other folks have just been incredible. Ezra Cooperstein was the first person to reach out through LinkedIn. This was 2-ish years ago, if not longer.
Okay.
And I didn't know what Knight was, didn't know who Ezra was, just trying to respond to everything from every corner of the planet at this point. Like I am a yes to everything kind of person. Had a one-on-one with him. And it wasn't until that morning where I'm going through my calendar and I'm like, okay, who is this person? What did I sign up for today? I was like, holy shit, what is like, this is nuts. This is cool. And so I've had a long-standing relationship with them, which feels so good because it is truly a, hey, does this make sense? Let's have a lot of conversation. Let's spend a lot of time together. Ezra has come to my house and gone on that 4 a.m. routine with me
mm-hmm.
just to spend time and to see the family and to meet some of the characters, which I think is a testament to how Knight is just run holistically.
What do you think they see in you?
It's a great question because you look at the roster across the board and I'm kind of a sore thumb in the mix to a certain extent. I think it's the long-term opportunity to utilize what is in my head for broader purposes than just doing brand deals. How can there be interesting things that certainly will bring in monetization opportunities, but give them something else to play with relative to like corporate training things or, you know, opportunities that have already popped up where it's like, okay, let's talk about speaker fee engagement type of things that may be different from, you know, someone like a Ksenet or a Ksenet, I should say, who's, you know, probably not getting, I don't know, might, maybe he is getting a lot of, you know, speaking opportunities, but it just, it feels like a different size. Plus they, like there was just a genuine relationship there. And I think they saw long-term potential and they liked the fact that I wasn't saying, hey, let's do this. I want to get out of my job. Like, how fast can we make some money? It was, let's build a relationship. Let's have some dialogue. Let's see what's out there.
Yeah.
And especially with my ESPN background in integrated marketing, all the opportunities have come up so far, BMW, Google, TikTok, Factor Meals, just did something with them, Ardrey Whiskey. I've been able to storytell through those and I think that, I don't know if they saw that as like, hey, this will be an interesting person for us to have those conversations with brands about, but so far so good. So it's really been only recently within the past 6 months, I want to say that things I've gotten like the brand deals and opportunities to come my way.
Yeah. I've seen, I saw the BMW one. I think it goes back, in my opinion, I think maybe what they see in you is, well, first of all, there's an adult in the room, you know, all these other kids that they have on the roster are super talented and incredibly successful.
Yeah.
But let's face it, they're still 20 something, and figuring out life. They don't have any kids yet.
Yeah.
They haven't navigated a corporate job. They probably can't even grow facial hair, but it's like, you know, now we have this new demographic with Tim, who's got this incredible relationship like Jimmy does with his audience. Or any of the other talented people on the roster. It's like, you've got this one-on-one connection with people. And if you know anything about, you know, YouTube is an example. Our channel benefits from this too. It's like, when we monetize a video, there's such thing as like RPM and CPM, which is like the cost per thousand. M stands for milli, it's Latin for a thousand. It's the way they determine the value of an ad, if you don't know. And our costs, CPMs are on average $30, $40, as high as $70 per CPM.
Wow.
And it's because we have more professional content. And so compare and contrast that to say like, Mr. Beast or, you know, some, one of these other that's, less professional, less serious and more, maybe entertainment driven. Their CPMs might be, and I'm guessing it's maybe $1, $3. It's under $10. And so they have to have a lot of volume to be able to generate a lot of dollars. Whereas we don't have to work quite as hard. We don't need bazillions of views to be able to, you know, monetize that in a meaningful way. And also the brands that we attract, these are grown up brands for grown-ups. So, you know, we get the BMWs or we get the, you know, Plunge or the TurboTax or the Marriott hotels or people where they have money to spend.
I think actually based off of that, it makes me think of what the Knight connection might be because I gained, the more I learned about the roster, the more respect I gained for the thoughtfulness and the work ethic that goes into what those, like Sophia Nygaard is a great example in regards to the consistency that she's put out on YouTube. And I didn't know who Afmau was until my daughter started watching her and then having a conversation with Andrew at VidCon about Afmau and her consistency of uploading and how thoughtful she is about the business. Maybe it's just like the strategic element to it and whether that's you've built 100 million subscribers or you've got 5K on YouTube and a million on TikTok or whatever that combination is, you know, maybe the middle part is just like this, the strategic approach to the space and whether or not that's like a, you know, somebody like myself with a corporate background or somebody that just kind of has known the business and accelerated because of their work ethic and their perspective.
Well, it's rare to have a middle-aged guy, let's face it.
Yeah.
Be so popular Another friend of mine who's doing really well on TikTok is this guy named Neil Ford.
Yep.
And Neil's a great storyteller too. Yeah. You know, he's a very seasoned human being who's have a lot of life experience, and he's having a great heyday on TikTok right now, telling stories and doing a great job. I think you're diversifying their portfolio, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you bring a lot to the table with your wealth of work experience and life experience. I think it's a great move on their part. This series is called Behind the Brand.
Yep.
We talk about brands. So what is the Tim brand? Break that down.
The Tim brand is, to the, you know, a couple of words you used earlier, relatable. Somebody that is a brand that is reliable. So relatable, reliable, trustworthy, just different enough that it's interesting without being so over the top, and consistent. I would say that those are kind of like the brand attributes, maybe overly thoughtful.
So have you had any thoughts of creating your own product, like your own energy bar? I mean, that protein bar like stands out as like,
yeah, my own protein bar. Popcorn would be 1,000% that I would like. I could do a snack hour mix of popcorn tomorrow, and I could either partner with the brand or be like, this is exactly what I see in my head.
A signature shoe?
If it was with the right collaboration, it would have to be like one of a couple of brands that I would only want to do that with, just based on what I see in my head.
What's the dream collab?
Overall or sneaker-wise?
Sneaker-wise.
It would have to be Jordan. To be Jordan brand, only because, like, you know, the Air Jordan 4 in 1989 changed my perspective on life holistically. So I'd want to, if we're talking dream scenario, I'd want to start there.
We just before you came, we had Nigel Sylvester.
Oh, wow.
Who's BMX goat.
Yeah. His ones are some of my favorite ones ever. Like, that was a fantastic collaboration. I think they did a killer job on those. And those are one of my favorite pair of ones to rock.
Mm-hmm. And then outside of shoes, the perfect collab?
It would be one of like three popcorn brands that I'd almost rather not say, just because they show up pretty often in my spots. Mm-hmm. There's a brewery. It would be one of two beers, either something with Miller or something with this brand called Other Half that's around the corner, and I actually know them quite well. And I think that they just, for whatever reason, hasn't like dawned on them that would be something smart to do.
Would you do a white label though? Like, you know, collab with them and like come out with your own label and design it? And
I would love to experiment in that space. It's funny because when I have done things to sell, it's been small batch out of my basement. And then all of a sudden we're doing, you know, shipping and all the logistics as well. And that was Kelly did most of the work. My wife Kelly did most of the work, and I felt bad. Like, I'd come home and I'd hear these printing labels getting done, and, you know, she's stacking boxes and packs in the corner, and it was very low volume, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
But it was fun to design a crew neck sweatshirt and have it be exactly the way that I wanted it based on what I saw in my head and based off of how that got inspired in the first place. And I'm, you know, sitting here in a suit that's not, you know, your typical kind of, you know, corporate America suit. Like, I'm very specific and intentional from an aesthetics perspective.
Yeah, you walked in with a purple backpack on too.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, sometimes it gets almost embarrassing where I've got purple Supreme gloves in my, you know, and so it like goes all the way through. There's purple lining in the thing. And it's this element of raised in the 90s and literally hearing lines like, with a hat to match, which was from an infamous Biggie Smalls song, and being like, wow, I can do that, right? There's some things where from a bold perspective, you're like, oh, this feels cool, but I don't know that I'm cool enough to do that thing. Mm-hmm. And then slowly but surely becoming more comfortable, even if sometimes too, I'm like, this might be a little too matchy-matchy today. Like, let me put that in my pocket. But I am very intentional, almost to an annoying degree, where it's like you don't need to do that much research about a t-shirt kind of thing. But if I'm going to have it, if I'm going to spend my money on it, if it's going to be part of my life in general, like, there's going to be, you know, everything in its right place, as the Radiohead song goes.
Yeah, but that's branding in a nutshell.
Yeah.
It's very intentional, right? It's attention to detail. It's
Yeah, I mean, my TikTok page is annoyingly clean relative to what do the text labels look like? How do they all fit into their own kind of category? So that if you went through, you would immediately be like, oh, this must be one of those just because of the way that it looks. And that almost holds you back to a certain extent, because then it's like, no one's going to go there and probably scroll through and be like, oh, wow, this is so aesthetically clean. And I know that, but at the same time, too, I can't get away from that.
Yeah, I think they call that OCD, Tim.
Yeah, no, there's without question elements of that in my day-to-day.
Yeah, but, it, you know, it's not a obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
I think it's obsessive attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well-intentioned design.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can call that UX, UI.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
Yeah, I mean.
It's a superpower.
I'd like to look at it that way. When I got a box from the Container Store once, and I saw how their labels, or not even the labels, the tape on the box, not only was it branded, but it had specific mottos on it that was really smart about who they are as a brand. And it was just, there was so much intention to it. So I love picking, I think that's why the Air Jordan 4 stuck out and changed my life perception-wise. Because like, you didn't just put a sole on this, you put an air bubble in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't just put some places to put the shoelaces, like, look at this wing, like, why is this mesh there? Like, well, I have 1,000 questions about this. And then I can't help but apply that to a certain extent as often as I can. Like my office has a lot of stuff in it, but everything is there with a story or with a reason. And same with my house. And I just, I don't know, for the time that I've got on this planet, I kind of like my surroundings to be that way. Well, I'm fortunate enough to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's branding 101.
Mm-hmm.
How many pairs of shoes do you have?
70-ish.
70.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
going to need a bigger house here pretty soon.
No, it's funny. We've talked about, you know, we've talked about every kind of crazy dream scenario, especially as things have happened over the past couple of years. You know, do you quit corporate America and move to Paris for a couple of years? Like all, like the things that are just kind of fun to talk about. And my daughter's always like the one that's like, no, under no circumstances are we ever leaving this house. There's good reason for us to not ever leave the house, but definitely not looking for more size and space. In fact, the less clutter, the better.
Yes. Although, you know, she's 11.
Yep.
And she, you know, she's maybe doesn't have the same perspective, but I understand. Respect. I get it.
Yeah.
If I were a kid again, I would not want my world turned upside down or having to make all new friends, go to new schools. That's traumatic. In fact, I did that as a kid several times. As we're rounding third coming home,
mm-hmm.
Impart some wisdom to people who are entrepreneurial at heart,
mm-hmm.
Trying new things that may not work, experimenting mm-hmm. like you are. What have you learned?
I've learned that when you just simply don't stop, that's when the magic happens. Might be a cliche one to start with, but honestly, just not giving up. There were 1,000 reasons for me to not make a TikTok the next day over the course of the last 1,000+ days, but I just kept making them. And then all of a sudden things start to click. So like, I think the ability to be okay with the fact that you're going to try 1,000 different things and you're going to have 999 failures, again, somewhat cliche, but like, holy cow, in practice, and it doesn't matter like what you are doing, that can bring a lot of weight to it. Don't let too many outside voices have too much of an impact on you, because it can be very easy, whether it's an interaction with a vendor who has a certain perception of you and you're then all of a sudden like, well, wait a minute, I'm so reliant on this relationship. Like there are so many things that can get inside of your head that can then start to veer you down a path that is not where you're supposed to be going because you're letting too many outside sources control you. It's like, I bring it back to two simple questions on a consistent basis. Are my intentions good and are my efforts solid? And if the answer is yes to both of those, then I'm way more comfortable to be like, cool, let me hit the gas pedal. If I crash into something, I crash into something. But if my intentions are good and my efforts are solid, that's really all I need to be cognizant of, because I'm going to fail. Like there are things that are going to go wrong. There are phases that I'm going to go through where I'm like, this is awful. This is off the rails. You know, whether it's like you feel as though you're getting canceled or you feel like nothing is good anymore. I think that bringing it back to those two questions have helped me consistently, and be cognizant of what has impacted you to do this thing in the first place, right? Woody Allen movies and Cheech and Chong and Wes Anderson, like those continue to be the source of it. So if you're into the pretzel industry and it's because you have the story about the recipe that your grandmother made, like always keep that at the core. I feel like good brands and things that end up exploding always have this something at the middle. And sometimes it's not the first thing you learn about the brand, but eventually you get to it. It's like, oh, wow, what a neat story. And the fact that that connective tissue was kept there and they were able to be consistent and they were able to like keep the outside voices at bay, but at the same time, be cognizant of their surroundings. And the last thing I'll say is self-awareness. Self-awareness, I think, is critical, regardless if we're talking entrepreneurs or corporate space or anything. The number one thing that seems to be the dividing factor from what I have seen in my career between those that have very successful careers and those that flop or have some sort of catastrophic failure at some point is self-awareness. And there are varying degrees of it. I literally can look and have conversations and dissect. Interesting, this person got to this level and then plateaued, or this person got to this level and then nosedived, or they just skyrocketed. And the number one variable consistently is the amount of self-awareness that that person had over the long course.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from.